As soon as their weapons were reloaded, Preacher, Uncle Dan, and Donnelly left the camp, moving warily through the darkness.
Dog!
Having Dog along would make it a lot easier to locate any two-legged varmint still lurking in the shadows. The three men and the dog circled the camp several times, working their way out farther each time. They found numerous bodies, but no live bandits. When Preacher was satisfied that the threat was over, at least for tonight, he led Uncle Dan and Donnelly back to the camp.
That man Preacher was behind the attack, I tell you. He and the old man were scouts for that band of thieves. They came in here and spun that cock and bull story about savage Indians being ahead of us so that we wouldn't suspect an attack was about to come from the other direction.
Yeah, that varmint don't give up easy, does he? He's trying to bluff his way through.
Let me handle this.
Donnelly stalked toward the large group of immigrants gathered on the other side of the circle.
Mr. Buckhalter!
There they are! Get them!
Not a one of those pilgrims made a move, though, because Donnelly was in the way.
Everyone listen to me! Mr. Buckhalter is mistaken. Preacher and Mr. Sullivan had nothing to do with the attack on us. They fought side by side with us and helped defend us against the robbers.
I didn't see that, and I don't believe it.
Lorraine Donnelly stepped forward.
It's the truth! I was about to speak up myself, but my husband beat me to it. With my own eyes, I saw Preacher and Mr. Sullivan battling the attackers.
That's not possible!
You had better not be calling my wife or me a liar, Mr. Buckhalter. You are simply mistaken.
No, he ain't. He's lying. And for good reason. He's the boss of the gang that's been trailing you ever since the wagons left St. Louis. He set up the attack.
That's a bald-faced lie!
Give it up, Buckhalter. I heard some of those varmints talking before you gave the signal for the attack to begin. And I know that all of you were working for Shad Beaumont, too.
Preacher knew his attacker was none other than Mike Moran. Mike was the only one big enough to so easily take him down. Preacher drove his right elbow up and back. Preacher reached back with his left hand and tangled his fingers in the man's hair. That distracted his opponent enough for Preacher to buck up off the ground and throw the man to the side. Uncle Dan raised a pistol and pointed it at Moran.
Hold it right there, big fella. This here fight's going on long enough.
Preacher quickly turned and saw Buckhalter backing toward one of the wagons with an arm looped around Lorraine Donnelly's throat. His other hand held the muzzle of a pistol pressed against her head.
Lorraine! Stay back! I'll kill her!
No, he won't. He knows that if he pulls that trigger, he'll be shot plumb full of holes his own self before Miss Donnelly hits the ground. You might as well go ahead and give it up, Buckhalter, because you ain't getting out of this.
Preacher started forward.
No! No, I know you're probably right, Preacher. But I can't take that chance with Lorraine's life. What do you want, Buckhalter?
Safe passage out of here. For me and Moran. And I want the money chest.
That's insane. We need that money when we get to Oregon. You can't expect us to give it up. We'll let the two of you go, though.
Not good enough. After all we've risked, you can't expect us to ride away without a payoff. Anyway, Donnelly, what will you need more in Oregon? The money or your wife?
Safe passage. That's all.
All right. Safe passage. Now tell that old man to stop pointing his gun at Moran.
Preacher motioned for Uncle Dan to put down his pistol. The old-timer complied with obvious reluctance.
There's one more thing. Mrs. Donnelly goes with us.
No!
You're mad!
Not at all. She'll be our guarantee of safety. Otherwise, what's to stop Preacher from coming after us as soon as we leave? You didn't know it, Donnelly, but you had a famous man in your midst. Preacher is known from one end of the Rockies to the other. In fact, my employer has placed a bounty on his head. I'm passing up a nice chunk of coin by letting him live.
Who's his employer he's talking about?
Fellow named Beaumont. Planned this whole thing so Buckhalter, Moran, and those other fellows could loot your wagon train. He did his best to get rid of me so I wouldn't ruin the plan, but it didn't work.
Donnelly looked over at the other three guides, Stallworth, Jennings, and McKenzie, who stood together at the edge of the crowd. Stallworth and Jennings appeared to have minor injuries from the battle.
Did you men know anything about this?
Not a damn thing, Donnelly. That's the truth. Buckhalter and Moran double-crossed us as much as they did you.
Enough palaver. We're leaving. And like I said, Mrs. Donnelly is coming with us. Mike, saddle 3 horses for us.
Ned, don't let him take me away from my children!
He doesn't have any choice, Mrs. Donnelly. Not if he wants to keep you alive.
I hope you ain't forgot about those Pawnee, Buckhalter. They're still out there somewhere.
That's why we're going east instead of west. You see, I believed you about them, Preacher, even though I couldn't admit that.
People got out of Moran's way as he went to saddle horses for him and Buckhalter and Lorraine. Moran reached up to clutch the shaft of an arrow that suddenly protruded from his shoulder.
Pawnee! Everybody hunt cover!
Preacher drew his knife and let fly, putting every bit of accuracy and skill he possessed into the throw. The blade flickered across the intervening space, turning over as it flew, and when it struck Buckhalter's wrist, it landed perfectly, slicing deep into flesh and muscle and slashing the tendons. The pistol fell unfired from his hand. Preacher snatched up the pistol Buckhalter had dropped and slammed the butt into the back of the renegade wagon master's head. Buckhalter went limp. Reversing his grip on the gun, Preacher tilted the barrel upward as a member of the Pawnee War Party vaulted through the narrow gap between a couple of wagons. Preacher surged to his feet. He lifted Lorraine and hustled her toward the nearest wagon.
Stay under cover!
Both his pistols were loaded. Preacher pulled them from behind his belt as he swung back toward the fight. Preacher was glad to see that the defenders had spread out, seeking cover behind the wagons. He spotted an empty gap between wagons and knew the Pawnee were likely to realize there weren't any defenders there. He headed for it and got there just as 3 of the painted savages rushed the opening. They saw him too late to swerve aside. 2 of the Pawnee went down in a spray of gore. That left the 3rd Pawnee, who tackled Preacher. The hard fall jolted the empty guns out of Preacher's hands. He looked up as the engine brought a tomahawk sweeping down toward his head. Preacher heaved the body aside and rolled over, coming up onto his hands and knees. He saw Uncle Dan standing there with smoke curling from the barrel of the rifle. Preacher grabbed the tomahawk the engine had dropped and threw it as hard as he could. The blade embedded itself in the forehead of the warrior who had been about to fire a rifle at the old-timer from behind. Preacher gave Uncle Dan a nod and scrambled to his feet. Just as before, the shooting was becoming sporadic. Engines were usually pretty quick to realize when they'd bitten off more than they could chew. Preacher looked toward the spot where he had last seen Buckhalter. The renegade wagon master wasn't there now.
Preacher, look out!
This is all your fault!
Moran tackled Preacher. Then he locked his hands around Preacher's neck and began to try to choke the life out of the mountain man. Preacher reached up, got hold of the arrow sticking out of Moran's shoulder, and snapped off the shaft. Preacher rammed the jagged end of the broken shaft into Moran's neck. Preacher pushed Moran's corpse to the side. Donnelly and Uncle Dan were there, and they both reached down to help him to his feet.
You all right, Preacher?
Yeah, I'm fine. Where's Buckhalter?
Gone. I guess he slipped away during the confusion of the fight with the Pawnee.
What about your wife? Is she hurt?
Lorraine is shaken up some, of course, but she'll be all right. Do you think we'll be attacked again tonight, Preacher?
Oh, that's doubtful. I reckon you took a big enough toll on both bunches that they won't be looking for a fight for a while. There's probably not much more than a handful of them left alive. Buckhalter's men will probably head back east as fast as their horses can carry them, and the Pawnee will go back to their regular hunting grounds and lick their wounds until they get ready to go raiding again with some young warriors to replace the ones you killed.
I'm sorry that so many people had to lose their lives tonight.
Yeah, better those varmints than you or the folks with you.
We've lost several men. They were killed during the fighting.
Yeah, I saw a couple of them go down. They were good men, fighting right to the end.
We'll give them proper burials. Leave markers for them.
I reckon that's fine. Best we can do.
More convinced than ever of the need to remain vigilant at all times, Donnelly doubled the usual number of guards for the rest of the night, but the hours passed peacefully, and the sun rose the next morning without any more trouble having broken out. Preacher and Uncle Dan were up more than an hour before sunrise, as usual, getting ready to ride as soon as it was light enough. As they were having breakfast at the Donnelly wagon, Ned Donnelly came up to them.
I don't suppose there's any way I could talk you men into coming to Oregon with us?
No, I reckon not. We got business elsewhere.
It's mighty tempting, though. That wife of yours is one hell of a cook, Ned.
Yes, I know. She's brave and beautiful, too. I'm a lucky man, gentlemen, and don't think for a second that I don't know it.
Now, you're going to need a wagon master and a chief guide to replace Buckhalter. Let's go talk to Stallworth. He strikes me as a good man.
Preacher let Donnelly do the talking, and Pete Stallworth listened for a few minutes.
I'm flattered, Ned, but I never been all the way to Oregon.
That Buckhalter probably hadn't been there either. You can do a better job than he would have, Pete.
Well, yeah, but he never intended to take the wagons all the way across the Rockies.
Mackenzie stood nearby.
I've been through South Pass and on the coast several times, Donnelly. I know the way, but I don't want the job of wagon master. Why don't you give that part of it to Pete and I'll be your chief guide? Sound fair enough to you?
What do you say, Pete?
I say it sounds like a good deal to me. We'll need a few volunteers from the men with the train to serve as scouts and outriders, though. Three of us ain't enough.
I'm sure that can be arranged. It's a deal, then?
Between us, we'll get you folks to Oregon.
Under the circumstances, Preacher thought that was the best arrangement the immigrants could have. A few minutes later, Preacher and Uncle Dan were getting ready to mount up.
Yeah, with a little luck along the way, you'll make it just fine. Keep your eyes open, listen to Stallworth and Mackenzie, and don't forget why you're doing this in the first place.
Preacher nodded toward Lorraine Donnelly and the two little boys who were packing some of the family's gear in the wagon nearby.
Thank you for everything, Preacher. If not for you and Uncle Dan, those robbers would have taken us completely by surprise. They probably would have wiped us out.
Yeah, more than likely.
We'll have the wagons rolling as soon as we've taken care of the burying. I don't know what to do about those other men who were killed. The robbers and the Indians, I mean. I suppose we could dig a mass grave and...
Leave them where they fell. I reckon the scavengers will take care of that problem for you.
It doesn't seem right to just leave them.
Well, they wouldn't have wasted any sympathy on you folks. Anyway, you don't have to worry about the Pawnee dead. The ones who lived took all the bodies with them. I can tell you that without even looking. They'll be laid to rest the Pawnee way, the way they would have wanted.
Well, that's good, I suppose. It still bothers me about those others, though.
It's a harsh land, Donnelly. Men die and other ones who live move on. That's the way of it. There ain't nothing you can do to change it.
I suppose you're right. I can't help but think about what those men would have done to my wife and children. But I'm not going to think about that. I'm going to think about the new life that's waiting for us in Oregon instead. Goodbye, Preacher. And good luck on whatever mission it is that the two of you are on.
Much obliged. Chances are, we're going to need all the luck we can get.
For the next few days, as they traveled eastward, Preacher kept an eye out for Buckhalter or any of the other members of the gang that had attacked the wagon train. As far as he knew, Buckhalter was on foot. Preacher halfway expected to come across the renegade's scalped and mutilated body. He nor Uncle Dan saw any sign of the man, though. As they drew closer to St. Louis, Preacher did a lot of thinking, and he let Uncle Dan in on some of it.
If Beaumont's put a bounty on my head, he's got to be a mite worried about me coming after him.
More than a mite, I'd say. He's got to be scared plumb half to death. He knows you ain't a good fella to have for an enemy, son.
As many pies as he has his fingers in, I reckon he's got folks scattered all over St. Louis who work for him. That means if I just ride into town right out in the open, somebody's gonna see me and go run to Beaumont to tell him where I am. It won't be an hour before all the crooked varmints in St. Louis are trying to draw a bead on my back.
Yeah, that's the problem, all right. You got any ideas how to get around it?
Well, maybe. I've been thinking maybe it's time I got rid of these whiskers.
You mean shave? Preacher, you've had a beard ever since I knowed you.
Which, as you pointed out your own self a few days ago, ain't been all that long. Now listen, Uncle Dan. When folks think of Preacher, they think of a rangy fella in buckskins with a beard and sort of long hair and a big old wolf-like dog following along with him. So if I shaved my beard off and cut my hair, dressed some other way, they wouldn't be near as quick to spot me.
You're right. You could leave Dog with me, too, if and he'd go along with that.
Well, he'll do what I tell him, most of the time, anyway. And he knows you by now, so that'll help.
So, you're going to pretend to be somebody else when we get to St. Louis?
We'll have to start pretending before we get there. I'm going to come at the settlement from a different direction, too. There's a ferry about 15 miles down the Mississippi. I'm going to cross the river there, ride north, and then take one of the ferries at St. Louis, just like I got to that part of the country from back east somewhere.
Preacher, that is plumb sneaky. Beaumont won't have nary a clue that you're in town.
Yeah, well, that's the idea.
Where you gonna get different clothes, though? You ain't got any with you except your buckskins.
Now, you'll have to help me out there. I ain't watching for you. When we get closer, I'll make camp, and you go on into the settlement and pick up a new outfit for me. While you're gone, I'll scrape off these bristles and hack off some of this hair so I'll be ready to pretend to be somebody else when you get back.
Don't cut off too much of your hair. Remember what happened to old Samson in the good book.
Yeah, I don't reckon I'll have to worry about that. I don't expect to run into any Delilahs in St. Louis.
I wouldn't count on that.
Preacher and Uncle Dan made camp about a day's ride west of St. Louis. Preacher didn't want to get any closer than that because the closer he came to the settlement, the better the chances he might run into somebody who worked for Shad Beaumont.
I'll see you in a couple days.
Preacher had given Uncle Dan money to buy the new clothes, almost all the coins he had left from the last time he had sold some pelts.
Yeah, when you get back, I'll be a whole new hombre. I'm counting on you, Uncle Dan. Don't go get drunk in Red Mike's or any of those other waterfront dives and forget to come back out here with those new clothes.
Don't you worry. I got a mighty big grudge against old Beaumont, too. There'll be time to wet my whistle later. Yep.
With a cheerful wave, Uncle Dan rode off, heading eastward.
Might as well go ahead and take care of my part of it, Dog. It'll give me some time to get used to not having all this hair on my face.
Preacher got a straight razor and a small piece of broken looking glass from his pack and went to work. It was a painful task, scraping off months worth of whiskers. By the time he was finished, he was bleeding from half a dozen nicks and cuts. As he looked at himself in the glass, he realized that his plan had a flaw he hadn't thought about until now. Part of his face that the beard had covered was considerably paler than the rest of it, which bore a permanent tan from the outdoor life he had led for years.
Yeah, I reckon until it sort of evens out, I'll have to paint my face like an Indian. Ought to be able to make some kind of paint to darken that part of it.
Preacher did, using berries and mud. It wasn't a perfect solution, but he figured it'd do. He wouldn't wear his hat during the 2 days he'd have to wait for Uncle Dan to get back, and that much exposure to the sun might help a little. Preacher then used the razor to cut his hair, and when he was done, he looked at Dog.
Yeah, what do you think? What the hell, don't you know me?
Dog came forward tentatively to sniff at Preacher's hand.
Well, shit, I reckon if I can fool you, Dog, I can fool Shad Beaumont and his men.
Preacher camped in a grove of trees not far from the river. He laid low when the occasional rider or wagon came by. 2 days passed without incident, and Preacher was glad when Uncle Dan rode in on the second evening.
Yep.
Uncle Dan had a paper-wrapped bundle tied onto the horse behind him. He cut the bundle loose, then tossed it to Preacher.
Here you go. You're gonna look like you're from back east, Preacher.
Now, you didn't get clothes that'll make me look like some sort of city fella, did you?
No. You said you wanted to look like a farm boy, so that's what I got.
Preacher unwrapped the bundle and found a pair of brown corduroy work trousers, a butternut shirt of Lindsay Woolsey, a pair of lace-up boots, and a funny-looking hat with a rounded crown.
What the hell is this?
Fella at the store where I bought the duds called it a Quaker hat. He said farmers back in Pennsylvania wear them.
Good God, that's a stupid-looking thing if you ask me.
Preacher put the hat on his head and looked at Uncle Dan.
What do you think?
I reckon that with that hat and the rest of the get-up and with those cheeks ears being as smooth as a baby's behind, there ain't no way in Hades that Beaumont or his men ought to recognize you, Preacher.
Good. That's just what I want.
But what are you going to call yourself? You're going to need a different name, ain't you?
Well, I reckon I'll call myself Jim. That's simple, easy to remember. Jim Donnelly, maybe, after those folks we met with the wagon train.
All right. Jim Donnelly. Pleased to meet you.
Shad Beaumont will be too, at first.
What do you mean by that?
I've been thinking about it the whole time you were gone. Here's what we're going to do.
A few days later, Preacher rode up to a ferry landing on the east bank of the Mississippi and looked across the broad, majestically flowing river at the settlement on the other side. St. Louis had grown into a sprawling, perpetually busy city in the 70 or so years since the fur traders Peter Legest and René Chouteau had founded it. Preacher had heard it said that 6,000 or 7,000 people lived there now. Seemed hard to believe that there were that many people in the world, let alone that many crowded into one town. Smoke rose from hundreds of chimneys over there, putting a stink in the air. At least it stunk as far as Preacher was concerned. He was used to the crisp, clean air of the high country. The old man who ran the ferry emerged from his shack on the riverbank.
You looking to get across to St. Louis, son?
That's right. I don't see the ferry boat, though.
Well, that's because it's on the other side. Be back soon. It'll be crossing again, probably in an hour or so. You in a big hurry?
Nope.
The ferryman, who was a tall, scrawny fellow with a black patch over his left eye, pointed over his shoulder with a knobby thumb.
I got a jug of whiskey in the shack, if you'd like a drink whilst you wait. Won't cost you but a nickel.
It's kind of steep, ain't it?
It's good whiskey, guaranteed not to give you the blind staggers.
Holy cow, I don't reckon I can pass that up.
Preacher was not particularly thirsty, but he did have a hunch that the old ferryman might prove to be talkative, especially if his throat was lubricated with a little Who Hit John. Preacher followed him into the shack and sat down on a cane-bottomed chair. The ferryman took the jug out of a drawer in an old, scarred roll-top desk.
You got business in St. Louis?
Yeah, I reckon you could say that.
Preacher took the jug and lifted it to his lips.
Whoa! Oh, what? Good God! Oh, my God!
Oh. Told you it was good stuff. Packs quite a wallop, don't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Whew. Sure, I'm looking for a job. That's why I'm going to St. Louis.
Well, you look like you spent some time behind a plow.
Yeah, too damn much time. That's why I lit out for the West. I had all the farming I could stand. Wanted to see some of the country before it got too old and wore out to enjoy it.
I used to feel the same way, son. Then, whilst I wasn't looking, I got old and wore out anyway. Now I spend my days running this ferry and watching other folks come and go.
You live here?
I got a place over yonder in St. Louis. Here, give me that jug.
Hey, now, I can pay.
Oh, hell, don't worry about that. I'm taking a liking to you, son. You remind me of when I was a younker. And I like having somebody around to talk to whilst I'm waiting for the ferry to get back. So I ain't gonna charge you for the whiskey. I just want a swig of it myself.
Preacher grinned and handed over the jug. The two men passed the jug back and forth, and as Preacher had suspected, the ferryman got more garrulous with every drink.
Yeah, St. Louis looks like a mighty big town. What's it like over there?
Oh, big ain't the half of it. It's the biggest town in this whole part of the country. I don't reckon you ever saw anything like it back on the farm. Folks everywhere you look, and cobblestone streets and buildings all crowded close together. And some days there are so many steamboats at the docks you can't hardly see the town from here because of the smokestacks.
Good God. I don't know. I'm starting to think it might not be safe over there for an old country boy like me.
You got to be careful, all right. There's fellas who'll cut your throat for a penny, or sometimes just because they feel like it. Once you crossed, I'd get away from the riverfront if I was you. That's a rough patch down there, let me tell you.
And one of the fellas from back home came out here for a while. When he got back, he told all sorts of stories. Said that there's lots of taverns and houses with fancy ladies in them, and that this one fella owned most of them.
Oh, Shad Beaumont. I heard of him. I reckon everybody in St. Louis has. That's only a rumor, though, that he owns most of the taverns and whorehouses. He has a fur trading company and a couple of emporiums and a livery stable. Hell, who knows what else? He's a rich gent, that's for sure. He's got friends in high places. The town's getting what they call society now, and Beaumont's part of it.
Huh. You ever met him?
Me? Why would I have any dealings with Shad Beaumont? I'm just a no-account old ferryman. I've seen him drive by a time or two in his fancy carriage, though. He goes to a place called Dupree's. Some say he owns it. Others claim he just likes to drink there. Say, why are you so interested in Beaumont, son?
Well, maybe I'd like to see if he'd hire me. I told you I'm looking for work.
I don't reckon you'll find any work with Beaumont unless you're willing to do some mighty shady things.
I thought you said it was just rumors that he's some sort of crook.
That's what some folks believe. I didn't say I was one of them.
So you do think he's criminal?
I don't know a damn thing about it one way or the other. And that's just the way I want to keep it. I don't want it getting around and I'm shooting off my mouth about Shad Beaumont.
Well, don't worry. I ain't gonna say anything about it. What I'd really like to hear more about is those houses with the fancy ladies. You know, it's been a hell of a long trip for Pennsylvania.
What you want is a house called Jesse's Place. Friendliest gals in town, bar none. It's got a mighty class to it, too. Ain't cheap, mind you, but like this here whiskey of mine, it's worth it.
All right, you tell me how to find it.
The ferry returned to the East Bank landing a short time later. It was a sturdy flat-bottom boat, large enough to carry two wagons and their teams, or a dozen riders. Preacher had to wait until several more men came along on horseback who wanted to cross the river before the ferryman would let them board. Four men who wore a definite resemblance to the one-eyed man, and who were probably his sons, worked the long, heavy sweep oars that guided the boat across the Mississippi's current to the landing on the west bank. During the crossing, Preacher stood at the boat's railing, holding on to Hoss's reins and unobtrusively studying the half-dozen men crossing with him. They appeared to be working men, much like he was pretending to be, except for one sandy-haired gent in a brown frock coat and a beaver hat. He wore a ruffled shirt and a fancy cravat under the frock coat. His horse was a big black gelding, a fine-looking animal. The man appeared to be well-to-do. Preacher pegged him as a gambler, and a successful one at that. When the boat tied up at the landing about a half a mile south of the long line of wharves that jutted out into the river, Preacher led horse off onto solid ground again, which the rangy gray stallion did seem to appreciate. The other men disembarked as well, including the gambler. He swung up onto his expensive saddle and rode off toward the main part of town. Preacher followed him, although he didn't care about the gambler. He was going that way anyway because the ferryman had given him directions for how to find the whorehouse known as Jesse's Place. Now, Preacher had been to St. Louis many times before, so he actually knew his way around the settlement fairly well, although he was pretending to be a stranger. He hadn't heard of Jesse's until today, though. It had been a while since he'd been here, and things sometimes changed fast on the frontier. Although St. Louis was civilized, it was right on the edge of a vast, untamed wilderness. Some of that wildness had rubbed off on it. There were a lot of different ways a man could get killed on the prairie or in the mountains, but the same was true here in the city. Preacher thought maybe it was even more true here. He had two possibilities for the first step in his plan: the fancy saloon called Dupree's and Jesse's Place. He was confident that if Jesse's was the best whorehouse in St. Louis, Shad Beaumont was bound to own it. From what he knew of Beaumont, the man was involved in everything shady that went on in the settlement. He wanted to be sure that Beaumont heard about Jim Donnelly. Unlike most of the houses of ill repute in St. Louis, Jesse's was not located near the waterfront. Instead, it was in a quiet neighborhood on the north side of town, where trees grew around the houses and there were flower beds full of brilliantly blooming flowers in the yards. The houses had two stories and wore enough coats of whitewash that its walls gleamed. It looked like the sort of place where a wealthy merchant would live. which was exactly what it was, Preacher supposed. Jessie might not be the owner, but she was in charge here, and she definitely had merchandise for sale. Preacher couldn't afford that merchandise even if he'd been in a buying mood. He hadn't come to St. Louis looking for a woman anyway, he reminded himself as he tied horse to a hitch rail in front of the house. Several others were tied there, and Preacher frowned slightly as he recognized one of them. It was the big black from the ferry, the one that the sandy-haired gambler had ridden. Preacher went up a flagstone walk bordered by flower beds to the front porch. The man who opened the door was tall, broad-shouldered, and black. He was bald except for a fringe of gray hair around his ears that trailed around the back of his head. Age did not seem to have withered him any, though. The muscles in his arms and shoulders bulged against the coat he wore.
If you brought those barrels of wine from the boat, you need to take them around back.
Now, you see a wagon full of wine barrels out here?
No. What do you want?
This is Jesse's place, ain't it? What do you think I want?
Preacher started to push past the man, who put out a hand on his chest to stop him.
This ain't your kind of place, mister. Now, you need to go back down to the waterfront. The girls in the cribs there, they'll be more than happy to accommodate you.
You talk mighty fancy for a slave.
I ain't a slave. I'm a freedman. And I ain't afraid of you just cause you're white, mister. The law around here ain't gonna blink an eye if I whoop your ass.
Oh, you're a freedman, huh? That's just a fancy word for a darkie who's got too big for his britches. I got money, damn your black hide.
Not enough, I can tell by looking at you. Now, are you gonna leave peaceable-like, or...
The big man ducked under Preacher's blow and lunged forward, wrapping his arms around the mountain man's waist. The man heaved Preacher all the way off the porch and into the yard. Preacher looked up and saw the big man stomping toward him, a look of outrage on his face.
You son of a bitch! You landed right in my nasturtiums! I'm gonna thrash you within an inch of your life!
Will you throw me here, you damn fool? Nobody does that to Jim Donnelly!
Preacher ducked a big ham-like fist and stepped in to hammer a right into the man's sternum.
Ah! Is that all you bring?
The man brought up a loop and left that clipped Preacher on the side of the head.
Damn it! You hit my flowers again!
The man reached down and slapped his massive hands on Preacher's shoulders. As he hauled Preacher upright, Preacher sent his right fist whistling skyward in an uppercut that caught the big man on the jaw. The man shrugged off the blow and started shaking Preacher like a terrier shaking a rat. Preacher kicked that fella square in the balls. Then Preacher clubbed his hands together and swung them against the corded muscles on the left side of the man's neck. While the man was off balance, Preacher kicked his right knee. Preacher jumped on top of him and swung his club fist again, back and forth.
All right now, that'll be enough.
Preacher twisted his neck to look back over his shoulder. He saw the sandy-haired man from the ferry standing there, a small but deadly pistol in his hand. The gambler pointed the gun at Preacher. It was cocked and ready to fire. While the gambler held the pistol rock steady, a woman rushed past him and hurried off the porch into the yard.
Brutus! Get off him, you bastard!
Jesse, don't get between me and that big...
Too late. Preacher grabbed the woman's wrist and pulled her in front of him as he stood up.
Now take it easy, mister. You just put that gun down.
I'll kill you myself. And if you've hurt Brutus, I'll make sure you take a long time to die.
You take it easy, too. Everybody just needs to settle down, damn it. Now, I didn't come here looking for trouble.
Jesse, what do you want me to do?
Put your gun away, Cleve. I'll deal with this gentleman.
Even though the gambler did lower his gun, Preacher did not let go of Jesse.
It's your place?
That's right.
Well, you call off your dogs, then. I don't want to hurt nobody, least of all a gal as pretty as you.
And she was stunning, there was no doubt about that. Even though Preacher hadn't really gotten a good look at her yet, he was sure about that much. She was tall and slender, Coltish would be a good word to describe her. And yet her body had plenty of womanly curves, too. Long, light brown hair swept around her face and over her shoulders and right down her back. The part that covered her ears had been curled into tight ringlets. She wore a fine, light blue gown that hugged her body. If she was a whore, she was one of the prettiest preacher had ever seen. She looked more like she ought to be a rich man's wife.
Cleve, go back inside and send Terrence and Micah out here to help Brutus.
You're sure?
I'm certain.
It's your house.
Cleve tucked the gun away under his coat and disappeared through the door, which he left open behind him.
Are you gonna let me go?
That depends. You gonna sick more of your men on me?
Nope. Not unless you cause more trouble.
Preacher released Jesse's wrist and stepped away from her. She turned to glare at him as she used her other hand to rub the wrist he'd been gripping.
You want to tell me what's going on here?
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to hurt you.
This is a respectable neighborhood. I can't have people brawling on my front lawn.
Well, what my idea? Your man grabbed me and threw me in the flower bed, and that seemed to make him go loco.
Brutus takes great pride in his flowers. What were you doing coming to the front door anyway? Tradesmen are supposed to go to the back.
Oh, hell, I'm not a tradesman. I'm a customer.
Dressed like that? I don't think so. You couldn't afford to be a customer here, Mr.
Donnelly. Jim Donnelly.
Well, Mr. Donnelly, this is the most exclusive and, might I add, expensive house in St. Louis. Unless you've saved everything you've earned from your farm in the past, say, 5 years, I seriously doubt that you can afford to pay us a visit here.
Yeah, but you don't know that, and neither did he.
Before Jesse could respond, two more men came out of the house and hurried across the lawn. They were white, and although they weren't as big and burly as Brutus, they looked plenty tough.
You want us to run this varmint off, Miss Jesse?
No. Just help Brutus inside and make sure that he's all right.
You sure?
I can deal with Mr. Donnelly.
Man, the angry look that woman gave the fella made him step back and hold up his hands.
Whoa, sorry, ma'am. Hey.
Together, the two men helped Brutus to his feet. He seemed to be regaining his senses to a certain extent. He sent a murderous scowl in Preacher's direction as the two men helped him into the house.
You've made an enemy.
Well, it wasn't my intention. But it sure as hell wasn't going to let him toss me around like a rag doll and stomp me neither.
I think we've established that this isn't the place for you, Mr. Donnelly. Why don't you just move on? There are places down at the riverfront.
Yeah, I know, but I ain't interested in those soiled doves. I want something better.
You can't always get what you want, Mr. Donnelly.
Yeah, but if you try, sometimes you just might find you get what you need. So why don't you let me talk to the fella who owns this place, and we'll see what he says about it.
I'm the owner. That's why it's called Jesse's Place.
Oh, come on. Women don't own businesses, not even whorehouses.
That's where you're mistaken. And you've just become even more offensive. I have to ask you to leave now.
Her hands came up from the folds of her dress, gripping a little pistol that must have been stashed in a hidden pocket.
I assure you, at this range, this will blow a suitable hole in you.
All right, I'm leaving. But you remember my name. It's Jim Donnelly.
I'm not liable to forget it soon, after all this commotion you've caused.
Yeah, and you remember something else, too. That big fellow Brutus, who I reckon is supposed to handle any trouble around here, I beat him. I whipped him good. So maybe what you need is somebody tougher.
You're talking about yourself, I suppose?
I'm just saying he was a lot bigger than me, but it was him who wound up going down and staying down.
Goodbye, Mr. Donnelly. Don't come back here again.
Despite her words of dismissal, Preacher knew he had seen a flicker of interest in her eyes. He'd made a good point, and she knew it. He let a smile play briefly over his face, but only after he'd turned away so that she couldn't see it. Well, this was a start anyway. Dupree's was next. The saloon was closer to the waterfront than Jesse's place, but it wasn't a dive neither. It stretched along an entire city block with the entrance at the corner. Preacher lingered at a hash house across the street, keeping an eye on the place from a table by the window. He had used up a few more of his precious coins buying some supper, but he had finished that a while back, and now the proprietor was casting some hard looks at him from behind the counter. He was just about to stand up and wander out of the place, figuring he would take up a position in an alley and watch from there, when a carriage pulled up in front of Dupree's. The sun had set, but enough light remained for Preacher to make out the shiny brass fittings and expensive dark wood of the vehicle. A team of four fine black horses was hitched to the carriage, and a black driver in a top hat was perched on the high seat. It sure looked to Preacher like the sort of carriage that a man such as Shad Beaumont would drive around in. Preacher stood up and strolled out of the hash house so that he could see better as the driver climbed down nimbly from the seat. The man opened the carriage door and then stepped back deferentially. The man who climbed out of the vehicle was tall and wore a beaver hat. The cape was draped over his shoulders. That was all Preacher could tell about him at first. Then the man turned around and held out a hand to help someone else disembark from the carriage. The light spilling through the big front windows of Dupree's revealed the man's face to Preacher in silhouette. It was a handsome face, sporting a close-cropped dark beard. The man was smiling. And he had good reason to smile. Preacher saw that a moment later as the second passenger stepped down from the carriage. She was a blonde with a mass of curly hair under her stylish hat. Not too tall, but very well-shaped and expensively dressed. She said something to the man, who linked his arms with hers. They went up the steps to the boardwalk and into Dupree's. Preacher had continued ambling across the street as if he had no particular place to go and was in no hurry to get there. When he reached the other side, he stepped up onto the boardwalk and looked through the window. The two new arrivals were being ushered to a table in the back by a man in a dark suit who was probably the proprietor. But likely not the owner, Preacher thought. He was convinced that Shad Beaumont really owned Dupree's, just as he felt sure Jesse's place belonged to Beaumont, too. Preacher turned toward the carriage where the driver had climbed to the seat again.
Evening.
The man did not return the greeting. He was old and wizened and did not look like he was in the habit of talking to riffraff on the street.
Mighty nice carriage you got here.
Ain't mine, you know it.
Well, yeah, but you get to drive that fine team of horses. Now, I gotta say, that's some of the best horse flesh I've seen in a long time. I guess Mr. Beaumont don't want nothing but the best.
What Mr. Beaumont wants or don't want ain't for the likes of you to be talking about.
Good God, it didn't mean any offense, old-timer.
Then Preacher turned, pushed the door open, and stepped into Dupree's. The place was a saloon. There could be no mistake about that. Not with the long hardwood bar that ran all the way down the left-hand wall and then turned to run along the back wall as well. Round tables covered most of the floor space to the right, although there was an open area toward the rear where people could dance if they wanted to. Some of the tables were topped with green felt for poker playing. There was a roulette wheel as well, although no one was playing it at the moment. The air was hazy with smoke from cigars and pipes. Chandeliers made from wagon wheels hung from the ceiling. The candles in those chandeliers cast a yellow glow over the big room. The soft light gave the place a certain air of elegance. Preacher found an open place at the bar and bellied up to the hardwood, which had been polished to a high gleam.
Barkeep, give me a beer.
Let's see your money first, Pilgrim.
Preacher slid a coin onto the counter. The bartender picked it up, studied it for a second, and then nodded.
All right, farm boy.
Much obliged.
New in town?
Yeah, that's right.
And you probably don't know that Dupree's caters to a higher class of customer than you. You can finish your drink, and you'd better be moving along.
Well, I'm sorry, mister. I didn't mean to butt in where my kind ain't welcome.
That's all right. You didn't know any better. Anyway, your money spends as well as anybody else's, I reckon.
Yeah, like his over there.
Preacher inclined his head toward the table where Shad Beaumont sat with the blonde. They were sharing a bottle of brandy. No buckets of beer for them.
No, Mr. Beaumont's money is better than anybody else's around here. Or rather, I reckon you could say that it's no good in Dupree's.
You mean he don't have to pay for anything just because he's some fancy swell?
I mean, drink up and get out of here. What Mr. Beaumont pays for and don't pay for is none of your damn business.
Nope, no sir, you're right, sure not. yeah. Is it always this crowded in here?
Dupree's is the best place in town.
Huh. That fella Beaumont come in here every night?
Mr. Beaumont is a regular customer, yes. And again...
I know. None of my business.
That's right. You go finish that beer.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Much obliged.
From now on, do your drinking in the taverns down along the waterfront with the rivermen and the rest of the farm boys who come west looking for adventure.
Yes, sir, I'll do that.
With that, Preacher turned to walk out of the saloon. His gaze roved briefly over the room and then stopped suddenly when he spotted a familiar face at one of the poker tables. A gambler called Cleve was dealing a hand. Preacher wasn't particularly surprised to see him. The man obviously had a taste for the finer things in life. He patronized the best whorehouse in St. Louis, so there was no reason to think he wouldn't do his gambling and drinking in the best saloon, too. Cleve glanced up, and for a second his eyes locked with Preacher's. Then Preacher continued walking out. Horse was tied up at the hitch rail. Preacher untied the reins and swung up into the saddle. He rode out of St. Louis on his way to meet Uncle Dan. The old-timer was camped about a mile west of the city. He and Preacher had agreed on the general area where they would meet, so Preacher just rode along in the darkness. Uncle Dan stepped out from under the trees and waved Preacher on into camp.
Hey, Preacher! Anybody follow you out here?
Now, what do you figure?
Well, it could have happened. I reckon you ain't got eyes in the back of your head.
No, but I got ears and so does Hoss. I trust him even more than I do my own self. Nobody follows.
I didn't figure they would. You find Beaumont?
Yeah, I sure as hell did. You got any hot coffee left?
Yeah, I've been keeping it warm for you. Sit down.
Preacher sat on a log while Uncle Dan poured some coffee.
Yeah, I don't know where Beaumont lives yet, but I know where I can find him. He'll be at a saloon called Dupree's, or if we can't catch up with him there, we can try at a fancy whorehouse called Jesse's Place.
A saloon or a whorehouse? What a choice for a fella to have to make.
Well, from what I was able to find out, he's at Dupree's almost every night.
Preacher then described Beaumont, the blonde who'd accompanied him, and the fancy carriage that had brought them to Dupree's. For good measure, he told Uncle Dan everything he knew about Jesse's, too. It wouldn't hurt anything for the old-timer to know everything he knew, just in case.
You know, you could climb up on the roof of the building across the street from the saloon with a rifle and shoot the son of a bitch.
I know. I don't think I haven't considered it. Then I thought about all the innocent folks who died because of Beaumont, like your nephew. Somehow, it just didn't seem like shooting him down like a dog was good enough.
There been some not-so-innocent folks died because of him, too, like that Mallory woman.
Preacher nodded as his fingers tightened on the tin cup holding his coffee. Uncle Dan was right about one thing. Laura Mallory hadn't been innocent. But she hadn't deserved to die either, and she wouldn't have if not for Shad Beaumont.
Yeah, I guess what we're doing is for all the folks whose blood is on Beaumont's hands.
Good enough for me. Say, you didn't happen to bring a jug back from town, did you?
No, I'm afraid not.
Well, I reckon we'll have to do without then. I got a couple of biscuits and a little bacon left, if you're interested.
Now you're talking.
Preacher spent the night at camp and rode back into St. Louis early the next morning, well before sunup, so that he could slip into town without anyone seeing him. It'd be better, he thought, if no one knew he had left the settlement the night before. With nothing to do until evening, Preacher found a small livery stable and used the last of his money to rent a stall for horse. He asked the proprietor if he could muck out the place in return for something to eat and the right to sleep in the loft that night. He was pleased when the man agreed. That arrangement accomplished two goals. It kept him off the street for most of the day. As much as he had changed his appearance, he didn't think anybody in St. Louis would recognize him, but hell, why take chances? And, if anyone asked about Jim Donnelly, it was established that he was broke and willing to do just about anything, no matter how nasty a job it was. Preacher didn't know how long he might have to stay there. The next step in his plan might work out that very night, or it might take several more days to come to fruition. At midday, the liveryman shared a meager lunch with him, then Preacher went back to his work. By nightfall, he had the place about as spotless as a livery barn could ever get.
Well, you done a good job, son. Of course, that's what I'd expect from a fella right off the farm. You're bound to be good at shoveling dung.
He had that livery man fooled along with everyone else he had encountered in St. Louis. They all took him for some kind of bumpkin, just as intended.
You're welcome to have supper with me.
I'm much obliged, but that was mighty thirsty work. Think I'll go have a drink somewhere.
Young folks, well, don't get drunk and forget where you left your horse.
Not likely.
Preacher used the water trough to clean up a little, then headed for Dupree's. Beaumont's carriage was not parked out front. Preacher stood in the mouth of an alley across the street and watched, hoping that Beaumont would show up later. An hour passed as night settled down over St. Louis. The preacher began to think that the plan might have to be postponed until the next night, or possibly even moved to Jesse's place. But then Shad Beaumont's carriage came rolling along the street. Preacher stepped out from the alley and began walking toward the entrance to Dupree's. The driver brought the carriage to a halt in the same place where he'd stopped it the night before. With the same alacrity, he hopped down from the seat and opened the door. Beaumont climbed out of the vehicle, but this time he did not turn back to help a companion disembark. Evidently, he was alone tonight. And that was good, Preacher thought. Made things easier that way. Beaumont stepped up onto the boardwalk as the driver closed the carriage door behind him. At the same time, Preacher circled in front of the team and came up onto the boardwalk too, about 20 feet to Beaumont's left. Beaumont didn't even glance in his direction. The man sauntered toward the doors of Dupree's, his beaver hat cocked at a rakish angle on his head, his long, elegant cape swirling around his knees.
Look out!
Preacher covered the distance between him in a heartbeat and slammed into Beaumont. Preacher shoved himself up on one knee and yanked a pistol from behind his belt.
You hit, mister?
No, I'm all right.
Well, you stay here then. I'll go after that son of a bitch who tried to bushwhack you.
Preacher leaped to his feet and dashed down the boardwalk toward the mouth of an alley.
Wait!
Preacher rounded the corner of the building and ducked into the alley. In the flicker of light from the muzzle blast, Preacher saw the big grin on Uncle Dan's face as the old-timer fired into the air. Then the two of them ran along the alley, ducking in and out of the shadows as they entered a rat-swarm to darkened side streets and lanes. They didn't stop until they were several blocks away from Dupree's.
I hope I didn't come too close with that first shot.
Oh, that was just right. You had to come close, otherwise Beaumont wouldn't believe it.
He'd better believe it. I damn near parted your hair with that ball. That would have played hob with the whole plan, wouldn't it?
Yeah. You'd have blown a hole in my head. You'd have had to finish the job by yourself.
Not hardly. I ain't that crazy. I'd have just bushwhacked the son of a bitch for real.
Well, let's hope it don't come to that. Reckon I better get back now. Beaumont's probably wondering what happened to me. You heading back to the camp west of town?
Yeah. I suppose it's as good a place as any to wait. You'll get word to me if you need me.
Oh, yeah. I'll try to get out there in a few days to let you know what's going on.
Good luck to you, son. I reckon you're the one ought to be named Daniel, since you're about to waltz right into the lion's den.
Preacher thought about that as he made his way back toward Dupree's. He was taking a big chance, all right. There was no doubt about that. But he had to run the risk if he wanted to give Beaumont a taste of his own medicine and bring the man's empire crashing down around him.